absorb these into yourself, and you will then use those observations to try them out in yet another existence. Even though you did not live her existence, you can gain from the knowledge of her existence.
I will become aware of the knowledge, those comments, when I'm dead?
When you're between lives, yes.
Yeah.
But imagine the input of every existing life form in this world.
Monster magnet. A controlled cacophony.
I think when we talked about the secretary in Chicago thing, that was talking about parallel timeline. That's a different subject?
A different subject.
Oh, that's what I'm referring to. Give me my parallel lives right now.
Parallel life? There are several. But depending upon your description of what best is, we would suggest that this one that you have is best. Because we see that at the age of 15, you made a certain other choice, and you decided that you would move into economics. And that, in essence, you became a creative. And while there is much to be said about economics, we see that you became a very great person in it. In many ways, a bookkeeper using bigger numbers.
Mm.
You would still like that person, but you would say to yourself when you look at him, where's the verve? Where's the investigation? You would see it, but you'd say, where is it going? It's doing nothing. One very interesting one is where your own wife said no to the proposal of marriage.
In 1970?
Yes. And that puts you right now in San Francisco married to another person.
Male or female?
A female.
So that is happening now.
Yes.
Not on this dimension.
These are alternatives.
They sound like reality, like whatever we're thinking, all our thoughts create realities.
They do.
I see. Holograms that we live in.
But are those parallel realities as real as this one to the person living in, or are those just...
To the person who's living in, it's as real as this.
So it really gets monster magnet is not the right term, but it's such an intertwined...
Talking about quart bottles, yeah, and sharing energies and resonances.
The objective is to create an environment in which there is learning. You cannot learn when you're a rock. That's been learned. Even that was useful. You cannot learn by having no mercy. But you can learn about having no mercy when you have no mercy. But that goes nowhere. Which causes the greatest continuance in which learning can happen? Suicide is sometimes inevitable. Sometimes it's not. Does it work? Is it useful? These things need to be explored.
Thank you, Evergreens. I'd like to go on to some quick topics. Do animals reincarnate?
Well, animal souls are a fraction of a larger soul. A person can be one eternate person or entity, whichever you wish. Could be an entire anthill. Or that an elephant can be a fraction of a personality, or a fraction of an entity. But when that animal casts the clay, that part returns to the greater whole.
So animals and all nature is part of our souls, spirit soul.
Yes.
So it returns to the spirit level, but then animals carry on and something some fragment of spirit is motivating them.
Yes.
All right. Are there vampires?
Hmm? Yes. But not in the Bram Stoker point. There have been those that have fed on blood, because in truth, blood is extremely nutritious. And certain peoples have drunk the blood of others because it was the most easily assimilable substance that was available. But not vampires in the essence of fiction.
Right.
Is it carrying a sharp teeth?
No. Sharp knives, but not sharp teeth.
All right, there's a new concern by some activists about depleted uranium, I think is the term for fallout after the Gulf War in 1991, and it's causing problems with people's bodies. Is that such a cause?
No.
So depleted uranium is not... Why are some of these people getting, you know, these veterans from the Gulf War getting all these sores? And
that is due to various gases that were released by opposition forces, and also by error of bombing certain gas supply areas. The clouds were quite large. Many have been affected. But that which is being experienced by veterans of the Gulf War is easily compared against those symptoms and continuing symptoms, short-term, long-term, of gases.
All right.
Not depleted uranium.
Right. I think in October there's a rocket going up called Cassini with plutonium on it. And many people are concerned that that could blow up and then we'd be polluted with plutonium in our atmosphere. Is that a concern?
And not one. You should see, first of all, the containment vessel of this. If crash, if malfunction, if ordered destruction, the rocket itself is designed to destruct, and it would eject that power package. The power package is designed to fall at 33 feet per second and still remain viable. Now, there is no concern on this at all.
All right.
The greater problem of this package is its eventual disposal in approximately 50 years from now. It will need and will have rocket motors attached to it, and it will be sent directly into the sun.
All right, thank you. You want to turn over? Oh, we're okay. Could you ever just tell me what was my most immediate previous lifetime?
To the year 1863. We see yourself to the area of Bremen in Germany, and in that you were a skilled metal worker in the making of armaments, particularly rifles, on a production basis.
All right, because I was just reviewing some of my lives and old notes, and I think I saw a contradiction where Carolyn had a life with me around that time.
Yes.
She wasn't in that life, was she?
No.
Yeah. But I think we did some traveling in the East India Company.
Yes, we did that.
What dates were they? Was that like?
In the same period. You see, you're looking here at certain major and certain minor
lives.
So
we're already talking about.
Yes.
So when we start asking about our past lives, we have to clarify major or minor.
Yes.
So I have two lives I've had in the 1860s, one in the East
Now you see it.
You want to turn that over? Yeah.
We're waiting for the other side of the disc to come up. Little scientific period, silent period here. I will attempt to move it forward. Going too far. Hasn't gotten there yet. Any second now. Or any second now. That would be the tired Bob from last night, faked by Bob last night. Still waiting.
You see, it can become remarkably confusing.
Yeah.
The problem with seeing past lives is not the life or the time, but the influence of it.
The resonance factor.
The resonance factor, yeah. Yes.
All right. Does industrial pollution affect the weather?
In certain circumstances, yes, but only to a very minor fraction. Very minor.
So that the ecological fear of global warming and all these things are exaggerated greatly.
Greatly exaggerated.
So we'll just assume that without going into details, all right? Are people geniuses because of having similar lives previously?
That can contribute significantly.
So that Mozart might have been a pretty good musician in a previous life?
Not necessarily a good musician, but good at something.
Oh, at anything, at something.
Yes.
Which
you see, in that existence we described as being a metal worker working on making rifles and shotguns and those things. Well, it was a talent that you yourself had in that existence that you would not need it in this existence is immaterial. That you were skilled in it, that you transferred that skill over to other areas. The objective, as we said, is to learn, but to learn what? What if every person came into existence with the propensity to be skilled at not anything?
Skilled at anything?
Anything.
Yeah.
Thanks for an interesting scenario. What if everyone is, though?
Are you saying we don't do that yet?
Not completely. It's beginning to show itself.
Spirit is beginning to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, I see.
That you can only create the environment, and then you can only have the environment if you created the prior environment, etc.
Right. I think... I hear people talk about their spirit guides say, you know, open yourself up to me and I can influence you. I think even Walter Fishman has said to Carolyn, you know, if you respond to me, I can influence you in your work. Do angels or spirit have influence on people?
They do and they don't. Realize free will allows interaction. But free will sometimes denies interaction. But no one can force you. But that you can request that aid is given. For Carolyn herself, that she would open herself to that particular entity is within her free will. that she can have the option of saying yes or no.
And
she can say yes and she can say no. That she says yes does not mean that that entity influences, but advises, gives energy. But should Carolyn say no, then that entity cannot.
But what you're saying, that if one opens to it, you can be influenced.
Only if you choose to.
Yeah, if you choose to.
You see, you can open yourself to any energy, but you do not need to accept it. You can perceive it. You could perceive an evil, but you need not accept it. Because evil can only exist if it's accepted.
Okay.
So therefore, nothing can influence that would have your permission first.
All right. Is mad cow disease a threat for many countries outside of England?
A threat to humans?
Yes.
No.
All right.
Not even in England. Jacob Kruisveld is not, and there was situations where this has happened. Note several things here. First of all, there has not been the epidemic that has been predicted. And those people that have JK is within the normal numbers. So, where's the epidemic that has been caused?
If they hadn't done the scourge of cattle, would there perhaps have been more of an epidemic?
No.
All right.
It's been one of the... It can be understandable why it's done. But it has been a very expensive situation.
Are there ghosts?
Yes.
People do see ghosts.
Oh, yes, indeed.
All right. Another factor is that Michael saw once an impression of a Neanderthal man doing a cave drawing.
Yes.
And that's not yet man. That's pre-Cro-Magnon.
Yes.
So there was a kind of culture.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
They expressed themselves.
Yes, they did.
So will we find and prove that there was culture in not yet man back to 100,000 BC?
Yes. Oh, yes.
All right. So archaeology is on the right track in gathering that?
Yes.
Do you think they'll ever accept the altering scenario?
No.
That'll never be accepted?
No. Not for at least another almost 150, 175 years. You see, the first part is to make a full track of the human genome. That's the first part. Then look at what are called logical inconsistencies.
Right.
That is much, much further.
But our interaction with the Boudins when they come, that will
influence. That will tell so much.
But it won't be accepted for 100 years after that?
No.
Will they tell us that fact?
Yes.
So, but we may choose not to believe them. For
yes, that's true.
That's true. All right. Because I have a note here, some spears were found by Germans, they say, from 400,000 years ago.
Yes.
Those are real spears?
Yes.
All right. Could the Evergreens comment on the 100th monkey effect? You know that theory?
Yes.
Have you done that before?
The 100th monkey involves that a species can learn indirectly after a certain number of that species have been given knowledge. That by the 100th monkey, other monkeys elsewhere, the 101st monkey, does not have to have the experience, but would know of it.
All right.
Not through direct interaction, but it would be a part of the, and there's that word, meme.
Hmm.
So, how would that 101st monkey know it? Is there such a linkage between minds that transcends the direct senses. Now that is very hard for some people to accept. The 100th monkey is very difficult for them to accept, because it implies, in fact it states, that there are other methods of communication beyond the normal senses. Now, easy enough to examine radio waves, easy enough to look at infrared, X-ray, very easy. Once you know how to measure that which is there but cannot be seen, then X-rays would give you gamma rays, would give you all spectrum, but you've got to know the spectrum there. No one has discovered the spectrum at which there is communication that creates the 100th monkey.
All right, let's hold that. Is the language instinct of humans in our DNA?
Yes.
Is there cannibalism going on in Russia right now?
Unfortunately, yes. But there is not by lack of food, but there are certain individuals that are that way inclined. Numbers here are very, very small.
But they happened 100 years ago, 50 years ago, not because of the starvation now in Russia.
Exactly.
Right. Was Aleister Crowley, the famous magician, legend of the Order of the Golden Dawn, was he an intelligence agent between World War I and World War II?
Yes.
So LaRouche's description of his influence is accurate there.
Yes.
All right. That can be developed another time. Is Feng Shui an accurate art?
Surprisingly. There are certain things in Feng Shui that are culturally influenced. But on the whole, Feng Shui works. That's the point. Yes, it works.
All right. There's a famous case in Omaha, Nebraska, revolving the Franklin Credit Union. A book by a man named DeCampi alleges a satanic child abuse cult, incredible sexual perversion that links into NATO in Brussels. Is that such a real scandal?
It's a lie from beginning to end.
Okay, we'll end on that. We'll move on. There was one curious thing. Mehmet Ali was caught shooting the Pope in 1981.
Yes.
There was a car accident earlier this year or last year where a policeman, an intelligence agent of Turkey, different authority figures, and a beauty queen were killed in the crash. And
yes.
They found this intelligence agent, very secret terror squad. He had Mehmet Ali's identity card on him.
Yes.
Why would he carry that?
A souvenir.
So no intrigue there.
Oh, there's so much intrigue, there's intrigue behind intrigue.
But he was using the ID.
Yes.
Why would he use an ID if someone was in jail? Anybody in the customs saw, oh, well, you're using an ID of someone in jail. You're not that person.
They do not know. People do not know names.
But he's part of the terrorist network that Mehmet Ali was. It's like a secret talisman of a group.
It's still a valid method of travel. It's withdrawn from airports. There's no need to recognize it.
Right.
Could be anyone.
But that person found dead with that was part of these networks that Ali was part of.
Yes.
I see. Moving into, let's contact Georges Gurdjieff.
Yes.
The famous mystic.
Yes.
How much time is remaining?
Approximately 2 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to do one other thing after that. So Gurdjieff, I just want to say, are his books, The Tales of Beelzebub, are they the truth? Was he a prankster?
No. An allegorist.
Did he have valid spiritual techniques, though?
Oh, yes.
And he learned them from secrets?
And learned that still allegory. It's still allegory.
Would he admit that his allegory is not as effective as James Joyce's Finding His Wake?
Different subject.
Right, but they both were working the same time around Paris.
Yes, but no.
Equally valid for understanding things?
Valid. If you understand that Gurdjieff had allegory and also needed allegory that would attract people.
He did have to have a publicity level.
Yes.
Which Joyce didn't need. He already accomplished
Joyce
that.
Did not need that.
I see, there's a difference. Okay. I'd like to talk to Mr. Gurdjieff, but that's enough for now. To end off...
Okay, that's the end of September 9th, 1997. So let's go over and see who is around. And if nobody wants to talk, we will carry on some more recordings. There's someone called Andrew. Andrew.
All participants are now unmuted.
Oh, that's probably Sarah. Sarah's World. So we got Melanie, I think we got Denny, we got Andrew. Anybody want to speak?
How much is that, how close is that to Ionic? Some of it sounded very much so, and some I'm not sure.
Yeah, most of it was not outright opposite. Like, are there vampires?
Yeah.
Yes. Right? There's a key one. Are there vampires? Yes. But then they're not like the fiction. People eat blood. You could... I may be saying the same thing.
Well, you know? He is, but Evergreen didn't say anything about immortality.
Right. They didn't go that far. And I didn't push it. I didn't know to ask that. The thing is that, you see, I asked, 75 questions. Did you notice that?
Yeah, they were great questions.
Right. A lot of key stuff. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, that was awesome.
Fine. So what I would do is I talked to Gurdjieff for the rest of much time. I knew I'd come back, and I'd carry it on. So this was always an ongoing thing. And I wouldn't exhaust a squeeze a lemon because I had so many questions. And I would plan on squeezing the lemon later. But forgot about this. Well, I don't know if I forgot, but I hadn't thought about it. I don't think about past lives when I'm engaging with Ion. But it was pretty interesting. I had been given a past life, you know, years before, around 1860s, 63. Then I ask about a past, what's the most recent past life? And they give us one in Bremen, Germany in 1863. And I said, well, wait a minute, I had another one in the 1860s. And then that's when it relates to what I learned earlier in this session, that there were parallel lives.
Yeah.
And so with the Evergreens, you don't just, you know, ask, what are my past lives? And they give you a couple. What was tremendous about the Evergreens, they'd say, well, there's about 27 of your past lives that resonate with this life. But the new aspect that came out in this session, okay, you had one in 19th century, but there also was another life that may or may not influence this life. So people, no, you've never heard anybody telling you their past lives, if they had any means of finding them out, and then say, well, this was a major one and that was a minor one. You get that?
Yeah.
That's new.
Interesting, I know. And when he got into the communication between them,
The resonance. He called it the resonance.
Yeah.
There are many lives, you know. I've got 3,000 lives. Generally, I have 3,000 lives, and you experience them at different reincarnations. And you can even experience them differently and over again and repeat them. But in this life, there were 27 lives that resonated, 27 out of the 3,000 that resonated with this life. And the evergreens could go into why certain aspects, like that one where it was a book smuggler, a criminal. I said, well, I knew that right off. Well, that resonates with this life, because that's my secret intelligence work, right? Smuggling.
Yeah.
Smuggling in this life. He names a life smuggled books, which were very dangerous back then. I said, well, that's one that resonates with this life.
Yeah.
See, so, look, right there. You don't know, Nate, give me a medium that would tell you the particular major and minor lives. I'm just learning in this, in September 9th, 1997. I've been doing the sessions for 17 years. And I'm just learning, well, you got to ask which are the minor lives, which are the major lives of the ones that influence you. So it's just very, and then the evergreens say, it can get remarkably confusing. When you die, you get all these factors of yourself, and I pursue that question in a further, the confusing element. Now, did you get that point where I'm influenced by a woman, a future life will be influenced by a 13-year-old dying in Calcutta at birth, giving birth?
Yeah.
I get more details on that later. So, what else in there?
Yeah, that would be good to hear.
Right. And, you know, are there ghosts? Yes. So that relates to the ion. We heard Michael looking over the shoulder of the Neanderthal man and the Neanderthal man being aware of him. So I added a new dimension there. Then we have this whole thing about the dragon. You know, a dragon is the American. It's supposedly America for the Chinese. And the dragon was an image of the UFOs that took people all over the world and had them meet each other. And it's interesting. What is the symbol for America could be the UFO. The Chinese knew UFO contact would happen in America. That's what the dragon may refer to.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
that's ion. That's ET contact.
Yeah, I know.
Then you heard that the murder of Dorothy Kilgallen. I think I do more on that in a later session. Then there's my own dream. I dreamt about the Boodians. I thought I had some kind of contact. No, Bob, that was not contact with the Boodians.
It was interesting, though.
Yeah, so I'm going to go on to another one. Another good one with hundreds of thousands of questions.
Cool.
Since nobody's saying much.
I don't think I can stick around too much longer, though.
Hello.
Who's speaking?
Andrew, AHJK.
Oh, yes, you post on Dupes.
Yes.
Have we ever talked before?
Yes, we have.
Okay, well, just a minute. So Madeline, it's 3 o'clock there. No, it's 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock there, so you may go to bed, right?
I might have to, yeah.
Are you going to go re-listen to this whole thing, 150 hours?
Oh, my God, I've been thinking about that. I don't know if I can. Trying to catch as much in the moment as I can, so I don't have to do that.
Well, what you would do, you would go through and then run through the conversations and get the evergreen sessions. Trying to re-listen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, have a good sleep, and we'll see you tomorrow. I'll be still here, still conscious.
All right, Bob.
All right, good night.
Night.
So, Andrew... Yes. You. When did we talk?
Some months ago, when I was listening to. Actually, it was on Carolyn's internet, looking for some information on diabetes and so forth for my dog.
Yeah.
The ion material. So.
Did we talk on Carol's Monday show, or did I talk to you privately on the phone?
Privately.
What did we talk about?
Interests, passions.
Yeah, I think it was an intelligent conversation. I talked to a lot of older women like Ion and sign up, so I have conversation with them. I don't have any conversation with males, but I remember having a male conversation, a few months ago. That'd be you.
Wonderful. They had quite an incident that night, too, as well.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah, quite interesting things happened that night.
After our talk?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I'm kind of a big deal, Andrew.
I noticed that after that night. I noticed that in a bigger way.
Yeah, well, that's neat.
Yeah.
Did we talk about McLuhan or something that you were interested in?
No. We talked about alt energy and dope and breath of ion.
Right. Yeah. No. You studied alternate energy.
I've been in the background, much like you've been talking about, I'm standing back and looking upon and not really commenting too much, but looking.
Right.
So I've been doing quite a bit of that and recognizing and putting puzzle pieces together and so forth. And well, that good stuff. I had not looked into your alt energy, which sounds fascinating, but...
You will not find any material on that. That's well hidden.
Well, I guess for good reason at the present time.
Yeah, because it's the only one. It's the real one.
Probably so. I've heard inferences here and there about fusion and so forth, and there's been a few references to some close to, if not on. Bought on, but that's been in the past. Not yours. So, but you've got a source that nobody else has.
We have the battery.
Yeah,
and it's amazing when it comes out. It's so amazing how it's made, and all the scientists are way off in a couple of points. Even Pons and Fleischmann are way off.
Well, that's exactly, when I've been looking at that for quite some time, and it's just a wonderful just eater. It's not a real energy producer.
That's right.
It's a good star. It's, maybe something, we'll look over here.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not, I've been at conferences too where there, certain, just even on the materials front, where they're look at what we can do. Ooh, but it's just also lab queen, and then some of the stuff never really ever gets into the mainstream. It gets in a cul-de-sac where it circles around and gets flushed down the toilet.
Yeah, well, it's not as effective. It has to be very powerful, and that's what we got. Did you go to the Boulder, Colorado conference in October?
No, the all energy conference there. No, I'm way out there just peering in. I'm not real close to that at all. I'm not in the community, if you will.
Right.
I'm way outside. I'm quite the amateur. I'm not a real specialist by any means, but I can recognize potentials and those that I'm just constantly amazed at the people that supposedly have degrees, great degrees by their names. You can't see. This is
right.
Rat poison. Awesome.
Yeah. Did you know that Ion showed up yesterday?
Yeah, I heard. I didn't. Unfortunately, I'm not quite so good on time myself, so I didn't quite get on, or I would have.
Right. Now, beg your pardon?
Go ahead.
Yeah, do you go to other forums? I was wondering are we talked about any other forums?
You won't find me on Twitter. You won't find me on Facebook. You won't find me.
You don't
yours
do much.
Yours is the first. Yeah, yours is the first, so.
Ah. Well, did you hear much of what we just played?
Yes, all of it, and that's why I had to comment on the Gurdjieff. I read a book in a library in my hometown before I moved out to where I am now. And it was in the, I think it was published in the late 70s, perhaps, early or late 60s, where this gentleman had supposedly gone through this serendipitous trail all the way from North Africa to Afghanistan at the time, a strange country, and gotten into this community of monks who were ascetics and had gotten, were seeking, enlightenment, so forth, this kind of thing. And he had talked with these, and that Gurdjieff came up, and they just kind of like, here's a guy who left before he got it.
Right.
So when I heard that, I just said, let me help you out here. Wrong.
Yeah.
Didn't get it.
The monk said that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That he had traipsed through, but he, it's like he did not finish his training kind of thing.
Right. He was a gadabout. He was an urban man.
I totally agree. Yeah. So
now,
to say that,
I could look at it another way. The monks may not get it either.
Go ahead.
The monks stay too specialized. I can see that 100 years ago, but that kind of specialism is not required today for awareness.
What is then?
What is then? Is that what you said?
What's your take on it?
On Gurdjieff or on being non-yogi?
No. What you feel it takes today? I mean, you've had so many different sessions from so many different sources, and what are you taking from this?
Oh, I like my five body model. I think that the chip body and the TV body are brand new situations, and all the knowledge before is based on either the astral body or the chemical body, and they're limited. And since you've got to deal with your chip body and your TV body, and the TV body can be subsumed into the chip body, so you can maybe just call it a digital body, no traditions deal with that. Therefore, you can relax about whatever enlightenment you thought you'd get in the monkish world, meditative world, and a newer enlightenment is required in living with the digital body or the matrix. So I find that helps me organize all the traditions. Like I live alone enough, I'm like a monk. I don't go to an office every day. I'm not interacting with people. I might on the phone. So I'm like a monk. I've done that for decades. So to the degree of monks by themselves and having experiences, I've got that covered.
Okay. Yeah. But what about, where's the tactility?
Tactility is not a sense, it's the interplay. So there would be an interplay between the four bodies plus the mystery body. And Ion defines tactility as contrast, which is the perfect meaning. McLuhan meant by tactility the abrupt outline, the abrupt boundary, the encounter between two surfaces. That's tactility, that's contrast.
Isn't that our essential nature? Don't we come across that just by being?
That's right. To be in the physical, to create, you need contrast to create with. And you don't have contrast when you're dead in the blissed out guff, and therefore you're not creating in the guff.
Okay, right. But we all have this sense of, it's that little man, that the sense of incompletion, that sense of seeking for more, seeking a greater self. And so many traditions have found so many different ways to try and bring their pupils into a greater knowing. What's that all about?
Well, the incompletion
is the physical life. The senses are, never can be satisfied. And the more you understand that, you're not controlled and you can live with the incompletion. And it probably flips into serenity. If you keep thinking you got to complete yourself by satisfying your senses, that would never be satisfied. That's why the materialist sensory life ends up, you know, decadent and
yeah, wizened, right.
and
agreed.
Yeah. You've got to rehearse your non-sensory accepting the incompletion, whatever that is, on the pain level, and then you get used to it.
Like how many rock stars are piled? Can you?
How many rock stars? What?
How many dead rock stars on a pile?
Right.
I mean, these are the people that have sought that method of trying to expand themselves and to no good. You know, they've died in the attempt. Right.
Yep. Because they get into eventually they have to. They're still being controlled by their senses, and they're going to make it more and more and more intense. Isn't that Maslow's rule? You know, you keep redoing something. The satisfaction is always decreased, so you got to do more. So these guys eventually get into the drugs to get the intense experiences, and it's intense for a while, but they will not satisfy it. And that's when they don't get to that insight that it's not going to be satisfied, they will kill themselves.
It's the little definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah, insanity is not recognizing that your sensory life is incomplete. It doesn't mean it's a fallen condition. It's actually way more important than the being dead. That's what Ion says. But by nature, it's incomplete. And so Ion says the ascended person has no desire. Now, they can engage and enjoy their senses, but they're not controlled by desire, and they understand the incompletion of the sensory. They understand.
There's always something more, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm glad there's always something more. I'm glad that I have a new day every day, and that's fun. But I'm not looking to quench something for final quenchment.
You mean you're not seeking to push against something that you feel you can't achieve?
Right. I'm not seeking to push against the incomplete feeling.
Right. You're seeking more completion.
I complete by recognizing that I will never be happy on a sensorial level. And the more I accept that, I actually become happy because I enjoy my senses better. I know their role.
Ah, right. There you go. It's something that's not, I mean, where's the owner's manual here? Right?
What was those last words?
I'm sorry. What's the owner's manual? I mean, here you are. You pop down. You know, you're told a bunch of gunk.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what am I supposed to, you know, where's the owner's manual, right? We get an owner's manual for this, that, and the other thing. You know, where's it for the human being? Where's, you know?
Well, that's what Bucky Fuller said, that, you know, the one missing book for humans was the owner's manual.
Bucky, gosh, I wish I'd met that gentleman. What fun. Huh?
You wish you'd met Bucky Fuller? Is that what you just said?
I think he was playful, wasn't he?
Yeah, I met him.
Oh, what was he like?
Well, the best story I know is that he would lecture for 5 hours, say, some long time. People would all fall asleep or leave, but he'd go on and on and on, and then he would take questions. Well, unless you really knew him, you wouldn't notice that he turned his hearing aid off when he started the question period. And he would actually continue what he wanted to say anyways. It would be part of the lecture, but he'd say it as if he's participating and pretend that he's responding to the questions. But he already knew what he was going to say.
Oh, God. That's sad. Oh, okay. All right.
Well, William Irwin Thompson says, you know, he was autistic almost, a monologuist. He accused McLuhan of being autistic and a monologuist, but McLuhan wasn't that way. It's McLuhan exposed Bucky Fuller. It's McLuhan. He told me about Bucky and the hearing aid.
He was his own mirror. Okay. All right. Good enough. I work with enough autistic children to know. Okay. Good enough.
All right.
Enough.
But the... Let's see. We're talking about Bucky Fuller and...
Yeah. Oh, tell me. Let's see. Some of the other people that you've met and so forth. You know, because you have such a variety. You have such a plethora of really interesting people that you've met. So,
I met everybody. Well, I met everybody on the realm of interest in so many fields. You know, I've been around long enough. I actually did meet a lot of people.
Yeah, well, of course. That's why I'm like, oh, let's pick the brain here.
That's right. Yeah, pick my brain. I'm a national treasure.
Goodness. Well, you know, earlier they were talking about the mythologist, Joseph Campbell. Did you ever have an opportunity to meet him?
Yes.
What's your impression?
I can tell you, in April 1979, there was the World Something Conference at the University of Toronto. And Bucky Fuller was invited there, Marsh McLuhan was invited there, and Joseph Campbell, and Rinpoche, you know, the alcoholic guy who was in...
I heard that earlier, and I was like, with Gurdjieff, and oh, please, no.
Yeah, Chogyam Rinpoche, who ends up in Nova Scotia. And there were lots of other people, Joan Halifax. It was a big gathering. It's like the people that would be doing a lot of New Age workshops in the 80s. It actually began at this conference. It sort of took all the different little gangs or famous people of the 70s, which I would call the William Irwin Thompson Quadrant, brought them together, had a very big ambition, and McLuhan was so appalled at the organization, he refused to go and speak. So he spent the week entertaining Bucky Fuller, who hung out with Marshall at Marshall's house.
Playing with the autistic man.
Yeah, playing with autistic man. Now, they were friends. I have their correspondence. It's very interesting. They started writing together in 61, and Bucky Fuller always considered that Marshall was extending his work, that the idea of the extensions of man, media were the extensions. Bucky said, that's my job. He said, he's got a lot of energy, and he just uses my stuff. He had no clue what McLuhan was talking about.
Yeah, it was quite a few steps above him or most people. I mean, I you know, through you, I'm just coming to understand this gentleman, and he really was he was far ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Yes, he's actually more surrealistic, more novelistic than Philip K. Dick or Pynchon or any of these guys. And you go back and read The Mechanical Bride. What an amazing book! You actually. The most devastating criticism that one could come up, and he called it a novel. He said the ads in the comic pictures, the comics, were the characters. It was a virtual novel.
Wow.
Now here's an insight, listen to this one. Because the novel was obsolesced by Ulysses in 1922, in Mechanical Bride in the 40s, McLuhan is making fun of all the novelists. He has no respect for novelists or what people thought were writers. And what he is confronting is sociologists, psychologists, and anthropologists. They were the actual post-Ulysses literature. Literature carried on in sociology and you could say fiction or novelistic pattern recognition carried on in sociology, psychology, and anthropology. So he didn't bother taking the novelist serious. He took on the sociologists, psychologists, and anthropologists, all the ologies.
Not even the science fiction. He didn't consider that anywhere.
No, science fiction. He said that Mechanical Bride, the book I'm talking about, he wrote to his mother, it's a new kind of science fiction.
Okay.
Where he says where the ads in the comics are characters, and he is critiquing... the deep thinkers of the day, but a lot of psychology, writes a lot about Margaret Mead, and he's placing them in a context. He's actually attacking literate culture from a very sophisticated literate level, and that means only talking about the professors and the sociologists, psychologists, and anthropologists. You don't deal with the fucking commercial novelists down in fucking New York City with the ridiculous novels that are trivial and are not going to get more complex or more interesting than Ulysses. So that's a good insight. That's never been said within the McLuhan world, what I just said before, that he took on the ologies because that's what people went to universities to study. You know, they studied the ologies. Maybe
also, Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to break your
chance. Yeah, go ahead. You said that's so interesting?
Well, it's interesting only for the fact that, just the whole synchronicity kind of thing. I was in junior high, and some of my friends and whatnot, they were listening to, of course, who would they be listening to, but one of your favorite recording artists.
Zappa.
And, yes, of course. Joe's Garage and all that good stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
And just, a few of these bits and pieces are like, oh, that's, isn't that interesting that it all, coalesces into an individual.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
That means you were born in 62 or 63.
You're getting warm.
Well, the late 70s, Joe's Garage is 79, and if you're in high school, he's 17 or 18.
Yeah. For me, you'd have to look at the movie that came out just a number of years ago called, I think it's called 8mm.
I don't know that.
Yeah, well, I think it was 8mm, and it summarizes my group of friends.
That's before Slacker. That's before the big Molly mid-'80s movies with Weasel, right?
Well, it's a more modern, but it's. One of the gentlemen that I, who's one of my friends.
Oh, I know. What about Dazed? No, Dazed is done in the 90s.
That's all later, yeah. I'm trying to date myself. But one of the guys that, we used to hang around, in our group, if you will, that he came out here to Southern California, where I'm at right now. And he went to USC Film School and... ended up getting, a multi-million-dollar deal, and nothing ever came from it, I don't think.
You mean he got a deal to make a film?
It's one of those things in Hollywood, especially at the time that he was doing it, it was like a lot of interesting connections and so forth, movies that never get made, but you get a lot of money for doing it, right?
He did make it.
I don't think he ever did, no.
But he got paid.
Yes.
Wow.
And I think you always kind of wondered, and the name kind of said it all,
Yeah.
I'm not going to go any more into that, on this kind of, public broadcast.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, but he, I guess he's in England now, and I haven't spoken to him since, in decades, but I saw his website up and so forth, and brought back memories, if you will, but all those kinds of things, Zappa and all that good stuff, that just were like, oh my goodness, here's a guy who knows about Zappa and all this, it's just like really, one of those odd coincidences kind of thing.
Yeah, well, in 93, I was on KPFK, Eben Ray's station, and the next night, I went to a Tim Leary lecture, and at intermission, I went outside, and I was near the bar, and the bartender was saying to some of his friends, I heard this guy on the radio last night, and he talked about Mae Brussel, Christian Murdy, Zapp, and he listed off all the guys that that I talked to, and he says, this guy knew everybody, he knew everything, it was incredible. And I'm sitting there listening to this guy say this about me,
Uh-huh.
And then he says, then he ends by saying, I love living in L.A.
That's funny as fun, right? That's what this guy who lives in England now, who was once one of my friends, said exactly that. He's in England and on the website, I love L.A.
Uh-huh.
Or at least
I quote Finnegan's Wake. Whenever I talk to Eben, I say, let me be Los Angeles.
Well, see, that's the other nexus point. In college, I had a college... frat roommate who was a literature student, and that was one of his big things, was Joyce.
Yeah?
Loved Joyce. So me, coming from a different background, I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, you couldn't read. You were semi-literate.
I was literate, but I wasn't novel literate.
Right.
I was, give me something much more interesting that I can... chew on and that I can find more practicality in.
What, Terrence McKenna?
No, I really am not. A little bit of science fiction. a little bit of doom and that kind of thing, but not, you know, I'm not real steeped in fiction.
Right. So what did you read?